front row, while the rest of the coven stood at the back. They cleared a path as soon as they saw us come through. My heart raced, once again being pummeled by so many emotions. There was so much grief and sorrow. My eyes instantly teared up. Keep it together. As we reached the podium, the mage council took their seats at the long table, with Imogene and Leonidas sitting in the middle. Their expressions were a mixture of sadness and frustration, a lot of which I could feel directly, except for Imogene. She was very much immune to my empathy. I glanced around the hall, making brief eye contact with our rag team. Tatiana, Santana, Dylan, Raph, and Astrid all gave me soft smiles and nods, which I was happy to return. The relief of seeing them all safe and in one piece was difficult to describe. I was just so thrilled to see them all there. Garrett, Poe, Rowena, Lincoln, and Nicholas were seated next to them. Shame and sadness oozed out of the group, since one of their own had been revealed as the evil mastermind behind all the gargoyle attacks. Garrett gave me a weak, sad smile before shifting his focus back to Finch. He looked heartbroken and disappointed. Even though I couldn't feel him, his expression was indubitably genuine. Alton and Tobe lit up when they saw me. Adley was pale, her lips trembling as grief and shame ate away at her. Finch, on the other hand, was annoyingly relaxed. His burns were healing slowly, but half of his face and arms were still covered in bandages. His left eye and jaw were bruised and swollen, courtesy of my fists. The moment our eyes met, a sharp, familiar pain shot through my right knee, where he'd cut me with his esprit. I gripped it tightly, massaging until the ache subsided.
"Harley, I'm so happy to see you're okay,"
Imogene exclaimed, beaming at me. It made me feel good.
"Harley Merlin,"
Leonidas cut in, raising an eyebrow.
"Why are you here? We didn't summon you to this hearing."
Raph's anger was clear and boiling in my chest. I stole a glance at him and noticed that he didn't make any efforts to hide his discontentment. Whatever was going on between him and his dad, it burned hot and full of rage. Frankly, I didn't like his tone either. Not after everything I'd discovered about my family, and especially not after everything I'd been through. And with an entire room of emotions constantly pummeling me, I had very little patience left, and literally nothing to lose if I went ahead and acted as my good old self.
"Wade thinks you all need to hear what I have to say," I replied. "I just so happened to wake up. We figured it was a good time to pop down here and say hello."
"And what is it you have to say that we don't already know?"
Leonidas asked, the corner of his mouth twitching, despite his otherwise stern expression.
"I don't know, man," I replied with a shrug. "What have you got so far? I'll fill in the blanks for you."
"Try not to piss him off," Wade whispered above me. "He's asking for it," I muttered.
"Well, what we have so far is a pretty clear picture. The San Diego Coven allowed an evil mass murderer's illegitimate and equally murderous son to infiltrate its ranks and sabotage the bestiary, on which the entire magical world relies,"
Leonidas said.
"As expected, Alton Waterhouse failed to notify the Mage Council of the Coven's illicit activities and its attempts to cover up Finch Shipton's deeds, and is now looking at too many lives lost. We are currently about to reach a decision regarding the San Diego Coven's fate, as well as the bestiary's new location. Clearly, it can no longer stay here."
A couple of seconds passed as I thought over Leonidas's harsh assessment.
"There's a lot to unpack there. Hold on," I said.
I went through my version of the events, from the very first night at the casino, every page of Coven material that I'd read, every magical that I'd met and spoken to. I then remembered something from my induction package. At the very end of that folder was a list of the Coven's senior magicals, including the preceptors, the physician, the security detail, and Alton himself. Naturally, that included files on each, including Adley Delabarte. To my surprise, an interesting fact came up.
Director Waterhouse, can you tell me how Adley Delabarte came to the San Diego Coven?
I asked. At the sound of her name, Adley shot me a confused glance, still sniffing. I was angry at her, but I felt sorry for her too. I could feel her grief, her remorse, and most importantly, her broken heart. Judging by how detached Finch looked while sitting next to her, he didn't give a damn about her feelings, even though she didn't hold any of it back with her regretful sobs. A faint smile tugged at Alton's lips. He'd figured out my angle.
Adley Delabarte was referred to Halifax by the former director of the San Diego Coven 2 years ago, he said. The Los Angeles Coven agreed to her transfer and provided her with wonderful recommendations.
And when did Finch come to the San Diego Coven? I asked.
Approximately around the same time,
Alton replied. Leonidas narrowed his eyes at me.
What exactly are you implying, Miss Merlin?
Imogene didn't look too happy either, but given how quickly her shoulders dropped, she understood where I was going with this. I'm not implying anything, Mage Levi, I replied. I'm merely stating a fact, which I believe both Adley and Finch will confirm, should they decide to cooperate with the coven. I assume the right to remain silent is a thing amongst magicals, too. Point is, the Los Angeles Coven sent over a supposedly cleared and trustworthy physician. They had no knowledge of Finch Anker's real name, or his ties to Catherine Shipton, not to mention his affair with Adley. By your same harsh reasoning, if the San Diego Coven failed to identify the traitors, why didn't the Los Angeles Coven spot them either? Was nobody aware of the relationship?
I'm not following you, Imogene replied, frowning slightly.
Whatever Finch had been planning, it's been going on for years, long before he came to the San Diego Coven. That much he confirmed himself. Adley was a tool, one he used to conceal his shapeshifter abilities, I said. Finch knew exactly what he was doing, and Adley played along, without asking too many questions because she was obviously head over heels for the guy. I don't see why the San Diego Coven should be held accountable for Adley's crooked ways. If you plan to punish us, you had better dish out the same for the LAC, who sent her here in the first place. Or better yet, do the decent thing, and simply admit that you were all duped. Instead of playing the blame game, we should be working together against the real threat.
The real threat,
Leonidas repeated, his bitterness turning my stomach inside out. Catherine Shipton, I declared. She is alive, and hiding somewhere, orchestrating all this from afar, through proxies. Judging by how chilled out Finch seems to be, I get the feeling he wasn't her only access port into a coven. More will come. The bestiary was most likely a ruse, an attempt to destabilize magical society. The San Diego Coven was simply a great opportunity because of the generally low morale and mediocrity left behind by Halifax. Instead of bickering like old hags, you all should be thinking of ways to come together and work out a strategy. Because what happened 2 days ago was only the beginning.
How do you know? Was your entire orphan bit a charade? Are you in contact with Catherine Shipton? What else aren't you telling us?
Leonidas retorted, officially angry. Tone it the hell down, I said, raising my voice. His anger was no match for mine at this point. It's freaking logical. And Finch said so himself. Stop deflecting back to me. Because I had absolutely nothing to do with this mess. I tried to stop it, like everyone else.
And stop it, she did, Alton interjected. She nearly got herself killed to capture Finch. And had she not employed that painful Orisha's trick,
Our gargoyle problem would have been far, far worse. So please, Leonidas, show some respect.
My chest swelled with pride. Finch knows more than he's telling us to, I continued, recapturing Leonidas's attention. I strongly recommend that you postpone any sentencing until we find and stop Catherine Shipton. If anything, he could be used as leverage for her surrender. Blood is thicker than water, after all.
Yeah? How did that work out for you the other day when I almost killed you, little sister?
Finch chuckled.
Don't kid yourselves. I have nothing to say to you all. Nothing. My mother will bring about a new world. The weak will perish. The strong will thrive.
Good grief. You sound like a door-to-door preacher from the bowels of the Midwest. I groaned, rolling my eyes.
What do you know about Catherine Shipton?
Imogene asked me, covering Leonidas's hand with hers to stop him from talking. I had a feeling Mage Levi had more snark to hand out, so I was thankful to see Imogene intervene.
Not much, other than what I briefly heard from Alton, and what Finch told me the other day, right before the Gargoyle Massacre. She had an affair with my father, gave birth to his son. My father then married my mother. Catherine came back and convinced or manipulated my father to kill
my mother, I said, then choked up a little. I cleared my throat, unwilling to let Finch see how deeply it affected me. Then she bailed on my father and went on to become a murderous bitch. Much to her surprise, however, I exist. She didn't think I was born in the first place, so... ta-da! Imogene stifled a smile. Finch was seething. I'd insulted his precious mother, after all. I could see it all over his face. Everyone else was slightly amused, including Leonidas.
So in your opinion, and coming back to the main issue here, you don't think the San Diego Coven should be punished in any way for these bestiary issues, Miss Merlin? You were warned, after all.
It's because we were warned that we didn't tell you about the other incidents in the first place, I replied bluntly. Had the Mage Council focused on providing support instead of being all judgy and handing out harsh penalties, we would have gladly asked for more help. But the result would have been the same. Nobody would have guessed it was Finch. Not until our tracer spell. And don't even get me started on Adley. The L.A. Coven didn't notice her shortcomings either. So no, I don't think we deserve penalties. Or any punishment.
Are you sure about that, Miss Merlin?
Leonidas replied, once more raising an eyebrow. He didn't come across as angry anymore. More like... impressed. What the heck?
Absolutely, I said. As soon as Finch was discovered, we moved to neutralize him. But he'd already... By the way, Wade, I suppose we know how the gargoyles got out the other day, right?
Yes. Finch had hidden disruptors all over the place, Wade explained. Some were discovered during multiple sweeps, but not all of them. Preceptor Belmore helped us with the search after we contained all the gargoyles.
So yeah, as I was saying, I continued, the San Diego Coven did everything right. We investigated. We cleaned up.
I'll bet you folks didn't even know about my apartment and the church incident until you got here. I scoffed when Leonidas, Imogene, and the other mages all nodded.
My point exactly. And even with what happened 2 days ago, our communication channels were down, from what I remember. Everything happened so fast, so violently. And yet less than an hour later, most of the gargoyles were captured or killed. And Wade tells me the citywide cleanup operation is going well. We've lost people in this fight. We've suffered enough.
Leonidas sighed, then leaned against the back of his chair. He glanced at his fellow mages and motioned for Imogene to pass a verdict. She stood, clearing her throat as her gaze wandered across the hall.
I must say, after all the testimonies and the evidence before us,
I agree with Harley on this entire issue, Imogene said. I believe the San Diego Coven has been through enough, and that there were issues that were simply impossible to avoid. I've felt like that since before she was brought in to speak, despite no one asking her to do that. She chuckled softly, then winked at Wade, and my stomach tightened in response. I hope the rest of the Mage Council will agree with my requests, which are as follows. Adlai de la Barte is to be tried and convicted as per magical laws. Until then, she will be held in this coven's prison. I looked at Adlai and felt her genuine relief. The idea of purgatory filled her with dread. Finch Shipton will be taken to purgatory and will be held there until we find and capture Catherine Shipton and any other accomplices she might have, Imogene continued. After that, he too will be tried and convicted as per magical laws. Finch didn't seem disappointed. In fact, given the grin slitting his face, it was exactly what he wanted. And that really didn't sit well with me. While I do agree that the San Diego Coven did everything it could to prevent this, I also agree to some form of punishment. I recommend stripping 20 points off for not notifying the Mage Council of the subsequent gargoyle attacks. Dismay kicked me in the ribs, followed by painful waves of discontentment. Nobody was happy with losing more points. We had it bad enough as it was. We needed that end-of-year bonus now, more than ever. Wow, I'm really taking this we thing seriously. Okay, guess it's sort of settled, but I'm holding on to my trial period just in case. And last but not least, for their bravery, impressive skill, and speed in containing this tragedy, Imogene added. I think the San Diego Coven should be awarded up to 1,000 points toward the end-of-year prize. Oh, and the bestiary should stay, too. The Mage Council will provide an external security detail, though, to assist, in case someone else tries to pull a Finch. Gasps and cheers erupted from the assembly hall. Relief washed over me, and I couldn't help but gasp, overwhelmed by how much these bonus points meant for the coven. More importantly, it felt amazing to know that they were all cleared of any wrongdoing and that their efforts were fully recognized by the California Mage Council. I sank into my wheelchair, feeling my cheeks flush as a wave of kind thoughts flowed my way. It was my first time in a crowd where I was actually welcome. It was weird and wonderful at the same time, making me smirk with pride. I'd done something good. Scratch that. I'd done something great. And it felt awesome. Wade's hand squeezed my shoulder gently. I looked up and found him smiling at me, in a way that made my heart perform exquisite somersaults in my chest. This feels nice. Leonidas and the other mages stood, prompting the assembly hall to tone it down with all the cheering. Silence settled over us once more, and Leonidas nodded my way.
The Mage Council of California agrees with all the verdicts, he said, then glanced at Alton. I trust you'll secure Ms. de la Barte's cell accordingly?
Absolutely, Alton replied. Preceptors Nomura and Belmore have devised a tamper-proof mechanism.
Good. We'll be on our way, then, Leonidas said, then snapped his fingers at Finch.
It was then that I realized Leonidas Levi was a telekinetic, like me, only infinitely more skilled. Finch shot to his feet, unable to control his body. He looked frustrated and helpless. A part of me enjoyed the sight. He threw me a sideways glance.
I'll see you soon, little sister. Like you said, blood is thicker than water.
He smirked. In your dreams, a-hole, I said, tempted to flip him off for good measure. I held back, though. eerily respectful of the Mage Council, not wanting to get penalized for foul body language or something. With one swift hand movement, Leonidas snapped Finch's chain from the iron ring mounted on the floor, then threw him through one of the rippling mirrors, like a rag doll. He then gave me a brief smile, slightly narrowing his eyes.
"Keep your nose clean, Miss Merlin. I'll be keeping a close eye on you."
I shrugged in response. Duly noted. Imogene graciously waved goodbye, then walked through one of the mirrors, followed by the rest of the Mage Council. Leonidas and Raph exchanged brief glances, and I felt the promise of a talk coming up soon between them. Man, there's still so much I don't know about these people, and I nearly got myself killed for them. Sheesh. As soon as the Mage Council and Finch disappeared into the seven mirrors, Alton turned to face the crowd, while Preceptor Nomura ordered two security magicals to take Adly away. They removed her charmed chains from the floor, then escorted her off the podium.
"I'm sorry. I didn't know,"
Adly mumbled as she passed by me. "Doesn't change what you did," I replied. "Your duty was to the coven, not your lover. Even I know that, and I've been here less than a week. At least help us out in the future, even if you're in prison. If you know anything about what Finch was doing, tell us." She opened her mouth to say something, but gave up and gave me a soft nod, then let herself get carried away by the security magicals. I could feel her shame and regret, but with all the lives lost, it was damn near impossible not to be angry with her. She was in love with my murderous half-brother, and geez, I have a screwed-up family. I think I was better off as an unsuspecting orphan.
"Harley, you should rest and stay away from the crowds for a while,"
Alton said, approaching me with Tobe right behind him.
"Thank you, Harley,"
Tobe said.
"You helped clear my name. Thank you all."
The rest of our rag team came over, while the crowd gradually dispersed. I didn't even realize that Wade's hand was still resting on my shoulder until he removed it, leaving a warm spot behind. Santana, Tatiana, and Astrid took turns hugging me, while Dylan and Raph shook Tobe's feathered hand.
"Harley believed in you,"
Raph told Tobe, then smiled at me.
"And we believe in Harley."
Santana was beaming like a midday sun.
"You were amazing back there. I hope you'll forgive me. I did put you at risk when I let the Orishas help you. They're highly volatile when they deal with a non-Santeria magical. But it turned out okay. You're strong, and they felt that."
"Oh, it's cool," I replied. "I mean, my voice was the only thing that seemed to work in drawing those gargoyles back. So yeah, risk worth taking in the end. Besides, I only did one part of the job. Tatiana kicked major ass from what I could see."
"To be honest," Tatiana chuckled, "I wasn't sure I'd pull off such a big trap. But thanks to Wade, Dylan, and Raph, it all worked out."
"How are you feeling?" Astrid asked me, adorably concerned for my well-being. "You took most of the brunt."
"Yeah, I'm okay, I think. Just really sore. I couldn't feel my leg back there. Whatever Finch's esprit can do, it played quite the trick on me when he cut me."
"We don't know much about his esprit at this point, but the Mage Council will definitely look into it,"
Wade replied.
"There was a neurotoxin in your system, probably something that the blade was laced with. Adly actually helped with that before we figured out what she did and detained her. The new physician handled the rest."
"That's enough with all the gushing and congratulations,"
Alton intervened, smiling gently.
"Harley needs to rest. Can you take her back to her room, Wade?"
My heart skipped a beat at the thought of being alone with Wade again. I didn't like to admit it, but he was really growing on me. His ego would probably explode if he ever found out, so I tried my best to stifle my smile.
"Shouldn't she go back to the infirmary?"
Wade replied with a frown. He was worried. "Aw. Nah, I'm cool. I'm hungry, though. Really hungry, like
an extra-large pizza with cheesy crust, two cheeseburgers, large fries, and rivers of Coke on the side, hungry, I said, my stomach protesting too much. Alton crouched in front of me so we could be on the same level, his hands covering mine in my lap.
Harley, with everything you've done for us, at a time when others would have run screaming, lunch is on the coven. Wade will get you whatever you need.
I'm not her servant, Wade said. It takes a phone call, don't be melodramatic, I answered, without bothering to look at him. Instead, I kept my eyes on Alton, who gave me a soft smile.
I know you still have 3 weeks on your probationary period before you decide what you're going to do as a magical, he said slowly. I just want you to know that no matter what your choice will be, you will always have a home and a family here. But if you decide to apply for a neutral position, I will gladly sign your recommendation for the Mage Council, even though we'd rather have you here with us.
I teared up almost instantly as Alton squeezed my hands, then dropped a kiss on my forehead and got up, motioning for Wade to take me away. I smiled at our rag team and Tobe. Their affection seemed to heal my broken heart. Alton was right. I didn't need Hiram and Hester Merlin alive to have a family. I didn't even need that woman I'd seen through the dreamcatcher, maybe my father's sister, an aunt or something. I had the Smiths back in the human world, and I had new friends here who were ready to stick their necks out for me. Family isn't something you're necessarily born into. My journey as a magical was only just beginning. There were some pretty annoying faults in this magical society, and the elitism and choking rules were a little too much to handle at times. But there was room for learning and improvement, not just on my end, but on theirs too. The coven wasn't perfect, but they were all trying to be better versions of themselves, even when they didn't know which way to go or what to do in order to accomplish that. And I was right there with them, for the time being, aspiring toward the same goal, a better version of me. Harley Smith was going to stay behind, quaintly attached to her life as a foster kid in a human world. Harley Merlin, on the other hand, even though she'd been deemed a mediocre and had yet to find her esprit, was just getting started. And if this turbulent beginning filled with forbidden charms and bloodthirsty gargoyles was any indication, the ride was bound to get even bumpier in the future.
That's cool. I'll be ready. Chapter 34. I slept through most of the week. Everything that had happened since the first night with Wade at the casino had finally caught up with my body. The rag team took turns visiting, with hot coffee and Chinese takeout mostly. They brought me up to speed on the cleanup operation and arranged private tutoring sessions with all the preceptors. Wade went back to being his usual pompous jerk self, and I was okay with that. His snark was my emotional anchor, literally. I needed our banter to function properly and process every single detail of my existence, particularly the discoveries we'd made about my family. The time would come when I'd sit down and comb through the archives, one page at a time, until I learned everything I could about my father, my mother, and most importantly, Catherine Shipton. She was still alive and extremely dangerous. I had a bone to pick with that witch. The sun poured through my windows. My last visitor, Astrid, had left the drapes pulled back last night. I'd fallen asleep staring at a starry sky. I sat up, stretching my arms, then scratched the back of my neck. The bandage was really annoying, so I decided to untie it and take it off. My throat wound was almost fully healed anyway. I got out of bed and checked myself in the mirror. There were still purplish bruises around my neck, and a stitched-up hole left behind by Santana's button, plus some more bruises on my shoulders and arms. But other than that, I looked like I was definitely going to live to see another day. That button was going to leave a scar, though.
My bright red hair was a wavy, slightly tangled mess. My sky blue eyes now reminded me of Finch. I welcomed that in a way, because it kept me focused on what came next, finding Catherine and throwing her in purgatory along with her son. After I scrunched her face up, of course, for what she did to my family. I exhaled, then fished for my father's note from the back pocket of my jeans and read it over and over.
Harley, I am so sorry for doing this to you, but there is no other way. Stay safe. Stay smart. I love you. Dad.
What kind of a father would do what he did? He and Catherine burned my mother alive. I swallowed back tears, crumpled the note, and tossed it into the trash can. It hit the lip and bounced back, then tumbled on the floor and vanished under my bed. I didn't need that facade of his, that bunch of lies from the man who'd killed my mother. There was a lot I didn't know yet, though. And the one memory I had of him didn't match with what the newspapers or even Finch said. Not at all. But he'd been tried and convicted. He pleaded not guilty. Was I letting my grief get the better of me? Was there, maybe, the inkling of a possibility that my dad had told the truth? Remorseful to have tossed away a message that had kept me sane for so many years, I got down on the floor and retrieved the crumpled note from under the bed. Only then, upon seeing it again after days, did I remember the box that Alton had given me. I pulled it out and left my father's note on the floor next to me. I turned the box over a couple of times. The engravings were all symbols I'd seen before, though I couldn't exactly say where. They just felt familiar. The box itself was the size of a regular book, with mother-of-pearl inlays in the form of delicate floral patterns on the sides and on the lid. The engravings followed the petal and leaf lines, like words lost in the image, tucked away and not for everyone to see. The lock seemed peculiar, cast in sterling silver with swirling lines leading into the keyhole. My mother's name was elegantly engraved on the lid, Hester Merlin. I tried to force it open with a small Swiss Army knife I kept in my pocket, but it didn't even budge. Then I noticed the text inscribed on the bottom. I'd been so tired and distraught the last time I'd tried to open it that I didn't even see the writing. It was clear, all in capital letters. Sanguis crassior aquae. I knew that line. I'd read it before. Heck, I'd said it myself just recently. Blood is thicker than water, I murmured, absently passing my index finger over the keyhole. A sharp prick startled me, and I gasped, sucking on the bloody tip. Something had punctured my fingertip. Wait, I mumbled, tasting my own blood, then brought the box up to get a better look at the keyhole. Yep, there you are. I could see the tiny steel tip of a needle, glazed in my blood. To my surprise, it shot back inside, and the sound of little mechanical wheels turning emerged from within. Three loud clicks later, the lid popped open. Oh, whoa! The box was lined in black velvet, and there were three objects inside. I held my breath for a few seconds, my gaze darting between my pricked finger and the contents of the box. Holy crap. With trembling hands, I took the first item out. It was a photograph. Hiram and Hester Merlin, long before they had me. They looked young and carefree, elegantly dressed against the backdrop of a sparkling ballroom. My father wore a three-piece suit, his black hair combed neatly on the sides, his sky-blue eyes beaming at the camera. Yep, there was definitely a part of him in me. I could see it so vividly there, the eyes, the freckles, the shape of his nose, all me. My mother was gorgeous in her black evening gown, her bright red hair caught up in a stylish updo, with pearl earrings and a smidge of red lipstick, She looked familiar, but I couldn't really tell where I'd seen her before. The shape of her face was mine, as was the hair. Her playful smile echoed in me, too. Maybe that was where I'd seen Hester Merlin before. In the mirror. They seemed happy, and in love, holding each other and smiling as if there were nothing but good days ahead. Little did they know. I wiped the tears from my eyes and put the photo back inside, moving on to the next object, a pack of game cards with a classic design, each meticulously hand-painted, nestled in a thick cardboard box. There was a message on the back. "Knock 'em dead, Turtle Dove." The cards were beautiful, reminiscent of the early 1920s. The queens were sensual princesses depicted in an Art Nouveau style. The kings were dapper and dashing, and the jacks were swanky musicians who winked at me, their beholder. "Knock 'em dead, Turtle Dove." I repeated the message out loud, slightly amused. I think my mom was a gambler. Ha! It was the third object that really had an impact on me, before I even laid a finger on it. It was a stunning ring bracelet, splendidly crafted in an elegant Gothic style, in amber gold. The bracelet held one large oval black onyx, and the metal was decorated with swirling patterns all around. The ring had a large white pearl mounted on it, and there were four smaller gemstones on the delicate chain connecting the ring to the bracelet, a sapphire, a red garnet, an emerald, and a diamond. It looked so beautiful, yet so different. I'd never seen anything like it. The moment I touched it, however, my heart nearly exploded. I bit my lower lip, then placed the ring bracelet on my left hand. As soon as I locked the bracelet around my wrist, I found myself smiling. It was a perfect match. Three breaths later, my body reacted, and my very soul sang. It felt like liquid happiness pouring through me, lighting me up from the inside. It was as though the entire world was right again. A piece had been missing from my very existence. And this was it. I knew it, deep in my heart. It spoke to me, not in words, but in a flurry of emotions, as if I was finally aligned with the universe. A surge of power rippled through my skin. Is this what chaos feels like? I didn't want to rush to a conclusion, but there was one way to put it to the test. I dashed out of my room and ran down the hallway toward the backyard, where the dragon fountain was, that little corner of paradise I'd yet to fully enjoy. It didn't even matter that I was wearing my slacks and tank top, or that I was barefoot. I ran as fast as I could, thinking I needed some space in case something went wrong. "Harley," I heard Wade behind me. My heart was beating so fast, my vision focused on the path ahead that I hadn't even seen him. I heard his footsteps behind me. He was running after me. I made it into the garden, my left arm tingling with what felt like delight. "This is it, I think." "Harley, are you okay?" Wade caught up with me. I lifted my hand in response, my gaze fixed on the fountain. It took him a couple of seconds to respond, after checking out the ring bracelet.
"Is that?"
"Let's find out," I interrupted him. I didn't want to hear that word until I was able to confirm it. Light bubbled through me, stretching my muscles and filling my chest with hope. I couldn't bear the thought of disappointment. I put my hand out, focusing on the water trickling out of the stone dragon's mouth. The sapphire on the connecting chain lit up in a breathtaking blue hue, and I squealed with joy, wiggling my fingers at the water. Droplets were pulled from the flow, perfect little balls of spring water that hovered in the air above me. "Oh, my days," I giggled, watching as the droplets trembled and swirled around one another,
until they combined into a larger blob of water, the size of a soccer ball. Relief burst through me, as I feared my heart wouldn't take that much happiness. This is it! This is my esprit! I managed to open my mom's box and it was in there. Wade, meet my esprit. Esprit, meet my Wade. I laughed, then instantly realized what I just said. I mean, meet Wade. Esprit, meet Wade. My face burned as I turned to look at Wade, who was staring at me, all wide-eyed and befuddled. Heat expanded in my chest. He pointed at the water blob.
You might want to keep an eye on that.
What? Why? I asked, then checked my water ball and stilled. It had tripled in size and was shaking uncontrollably. 1 second later, as a burst of energy flowed through me, it exploded, splashing water all over Wade and me. We stood there, dripping wet, and saying absolutely nothing. I was equal parts excited and embarrassed, my esprit animating me better than 6 shots of espresso in 1 chug. I'm guessing this is what you meant when you said the esprit can be highly unstable until I learn how to use it? I asked rhetorically, then wiped the water from my face, relishing the subtle jingle of my ring bracelet. That was a sound I was more than happy to get used to. Wade needed a couple seconds to respond. His eyes locked on me, as water trickled down the slim blade of his nose and onto his already soaked shirt.
Think of it as a sports car. You can feel the rush from the moment you get in it, but you still need to learn how to drive it properly so you don't end up in a lake.
I sniffed, then nodded slowly, lovingly gazing at my esprit. I think this belonged to my mother, I breathed.
That makes it all the more beautiful, Wade replied softly. I couldn't help but agree.
Sure, I had a lot of work cut out for me, plenty of training and reading up on the esprits, but I'd found it. I'd tossed my father's message away, and it had somehow led me back to my mother. A tear found its way out, rolling down my cheek and splashing against the cobblestone pavement, where my bare feet and toes were wiggling with delight. It is beautiful, I murmured. That road ahead didn't seem as scary anymore. I was a complete magical now, with so much to learn. But one thing was certain, even before I thought of admitting it to myself, I was right where I needed to be. Thank you for listening to Harley Merlin and the Secret Coven. If you'd like to find out what happens next, check to see if Book 2, Harley Merlin and the Mystery Twins, is available now as an audiobook. If it's not, it should be available soon, and you can visit www.shadebooks.com and enter your email address to be notified as soon as it's released. See you soon.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.